To the FEZ show, another season is in the book. Season 9 is over, and wow, what a season it was, with Jake Dennis becoming the champion. I'm joined as always by Edward Hunter and Jack Pickering. How are we, boys?
Yeah, good. Just about recovered from London. Needed a few weeks off after that. Had a couple holidays, and I'll see if I can remember anything from London.
It was a long 2 days. It was a long 2 days in London, especially with the red flags and the stoppages that we had. Ed, how are you?
Yeah, very, very much enjoyed being trackside at two of the longest Formula E races in history. But great to see Jake Dennis lift the title, as I predicted right at the beginning of the season, and nobody believed me. But it happened, and I feel very, very vindicated. And it was great to be right in front of the podium and see Jake with his head in his hand, just letting it all sink in. I think that was an amazing moment, just to be there personally.
That took 45 seconds for Ed to, in terms of the bit that he's spoke, it was less than 10 seconds. I was wondering how long it would take for him to mention.
I wanted to get it out of the way.
Fair play.
And you
your
will be
prediction
mentioning it over
came
the next
true.
35 minutes.
Yeah, your prediction came true. I spoke to Max Egumpfer after the race. I was like, Max, right, next year is your time. Right, so that means I probably have to pick Max Gunther next year now, because I'm fully in on Max Gunther on my prediction that did not come to fruition, although he had a good second half to the season, you could argue. But yeah, first half wasn't great. But yeah, fair play, Ed. To predict Jake Dennis means maybe we should listen to you more. Maybe we should ask for those lottery numbers and take what you say a bit more seriously.
No one's ever said, oh, let's listen to it. No one's ever said that in history before.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you treated him more than just a glorified pet now and again. But hey, yeah. Take what you can get.
Nah, it was a good call. Worked out well in the end. But let's talk Jake Dennis, right? Let's go to him first, because what a season. Started off brilliantly, obviously, Pico, with, you know, doing well in those first couple of races in Diria in Mexico. But then they had that middle of the season where he didn't pick up many points. But then the consistency from the halfway point all the way to London, you know, he was always on that podium. And consistency, we always say, is the key thing. And it looked like the championship at that halfway point, when he had those four non-scoring finishes, you know, it felt like it was going to be a tall order for him to come back potentially. But he was so consistent. And, you know, whoever won the championship in London deserved it. But, you know, when you look at Jake Dennis's form in the second half of the season, it was magnificent.
Yeah, I'd say this season came down to the two most consistent people in this in Formula E this year, Jake Dennis and Nick Cassidy. And Jake, yes, he had that blip. I remember saying to him in Berlin, it was something along the lines like 85 days he'd gone without a point or something like that between Diria race two and Berlin race two, which was crazy, because he had this phenomenal start to the year and then just hit rock bottom for four or five races in a row. It was
crashes and things. It was not like he was poor performance. He was hit, you know, bad things just happened.
Yeah, I think in Cape Town was the only thing that I think was his fault. I think he had to serve a drive through for power overuse or something like that.
It was tire pressures dropping too low.
But that's not really his fault. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Evans was did the power overuse. I knew that one of them was power overuse, and I couldn't remember which one it was. But yeah, like Hyderabad, he was hit in the rear. Sao Paulo, he was hit in the rear. Berlin, he had that weird spin out down at turn, the wide one, to, I want to say turn
attack
six.
Mode corner, right?
Turn six,
yeah.
Turn six.
The
turn
attack six. Mode corner, yeah. And so, yeah, it was just a horrific run of form, but as soon as he picked himself up in Berlin race two, he just ran. He was so consistent for the rest of the year. He did like five straight podiums on the bounce. The only time he didn't get on the podium for the rest of the season was that time in Rome, where he had the same thing as what happened in Rome season season 8 where they miscounted the laps and he had to save an extra lap of energy compared to everyone around him because he'd overused at that point. And if it wasn't for that, he would have had a run of however many podiums in a row. And yeah, he took the record, I think, for number of podiums in a season anyways. And so, yeah, he was just so consistent the entire year. I did feel sorry for Nick and Mitch because they obviously had that incident in Rome. And yeah, I mean, like, it's okay, they're old friends, they're teammates now, so but we'll get into that later on. But yeah, I said to Mitch, it was very weird that we had the same kind of situation coming into the final race 2 years in a row, because last season we had Stoffel, who was quite far ahead, but you had three other drivers who were mathematically in the championship fight, but realistically they weren't going to do it. And so this year we had Jake Dennis far out in front, and then three drivers mathematically in the fight, but it was unlikely that they were going to do it. So yeah, I think Jake, yes, he was very lucky with what happened to Nick and Mitch in Rome, but we can't put aside that he had just a fantastic season through and through.
Yeah, and I suppose sometimes what goes around comes around, right? So those incidents that he had at the beginning of the season, it hit his championship rivals towards the end of the season. So the points he lost out at the beginning for incidents that were no fault of his own, you know, that luck swung his way. So in that way, but we talk about consistency. Now, I would say consistency in Formula E, because of the qualifying formats in the past, right? With, you know, the lottery or the Group One going out first and so forth, you know, being consistent and being up there was so important. But this year it was a different form of consistency, I think, Ed, because it wasn't consistency of, you know, getting through the qualifying places. Like if for example, like a Cassidy, right, he didn't get always into the duels, he might have started in 9th or 10th, but he would be consistent in the race and get up to the front. So what we're talking about consistency here is that they were so quick that in every race, it didn't matter where they were starting, they would fight their way through if they were starting a bit further back than they wanted. So it was a different kind of consistency. It wasn't just being in the right place at the right time, qualifying high and finishing high. And if you could qualify the best, I would say, in previous seasons, then you'd go on and have a good season. And if you couldn't keep up with that, then, you know, that's where your championship would fade. Whereas this season, it was more about being consistent in the race and always being near the front.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you there, Jack, that the efficiency in terms of being able to make your way through the pack without spending too much energy and knowing in these peloton style pack racing sort of events exactly when to go. Nick Cassidy was very good at it. Dennis was very good at it as well. And yeah, if you compare Jake Dennis to the Porsche powertrain, the other Porsche powertrain cars, not just his teammate Lotterer, but also Pascal Wehrlein and Antonio Felix da Costa, towards the end of the season, Porsche just could not make their way through the pack as often as Dennis was able to. So his consistency there was very, very strong. And it really, for me, it made up for the massive disappointment he had at the end of his rookie season in season 7, when he had that retirement in Berlin where the rear axle just locked on him. And that was to me, he always had that potential, even in a completely different format in his rookie season. And we saw him deliver on everything that he's been proving consistently over his first 2 seasons. So to win in your first season in Formula E, it's not bad at all. But I do agree with what Pico was saying about Cassidy and Mitch Evans, that they had very good seasons as well. And I think the dominant narrative is probably going to be that them crashing into each other in Rome was what led to the result that we ended up getting. But I feel for Cassidy, especially if I look back to Jakarta, that careless incident with Wehrlein, I think that merely was probably what cost him a bit more rather than necessarily Mitch Evans being making that mistake in the braking zone and flying over the top of him. That's probably obviously the more dramatic image, but I think it's those little errors here and there in an otherwise really, really strong season by Cassidy, who I was very, very impressed by, that I think ended up costing him the chance to get the title to go to the final day. So yeah, it reminded me a lot of Verne in, I think, season 4, where the title ended a day early as well on that occasion as well in New York. But nonetheless, very well deserved.
Peter, are we seeing like a change of the guard in a sense? Right, we've got Nick Cassidy, Jake Dennis, Mitch Evans, you know, these three at the moment, right, who have been awesome really for the last couple of seasons. Obviously, you can't never count out Jev and Buemi, but you know, those were the heroes, you could say, the gladiators that were fighting for the championship. But now we've got these three drivers, you know, do you think, you know, these are the three that we're going to expect, even when maybe we go to season 11, that these are going to be the ones battling out the front? And maybe, you know, the Verns, we've seen Degrassi obviously drop, but obviously that's teams and so forth, and where you end up. Do you think it's a small changing of the guard, or do you think it's a bit too early to say that?
Firstly, I like how you said season 11, not season 10, because you know as well as I do that the powertrain, the hardware stays the same for next season. They can only tinker with the software. Because next year, I season 10, I do completely agree that I think we will see Nick, Mitch and Jake like going again in this fight. Obviously, even though they can't do anything to the hardware, the software will they will change around with the software, and that will close the pack up here and there. But yeah, season 11, obviously, because it's a whole, because it will be for some teams, it'll be a completely different power unit. I'm thinking of your Mahindras, your Neos. They will probably go down a slightly different alley because it's not really worked for them this year. But I think in terms of the change of the guard, I think Mitch has been kind of the middleman. He was there in season six. Season five, he was when Jaguar won their first race in Rome. Season six, I think he had that amazing first half of the year. Then they went to Berlin for that six races in 9 days that no one likes at all, that no one liked, everyone hated at all. And Jaguar just kind of like fell off the cliff there. So Mitch has kind of been that middleman. Yes, we had the era of Degrassi, Seb, Sam, like all that love. I think that, I know that as we've seen with Seb has had a resurgence this year joining Envision, but I do think that the bar is just getting raised every single year, and the like, and that now that we have the likes of like Jake Dennis, Nick Cassidy, who are coming to the championship from Nick came from Super Formula obviously as well, which is kind of like, I don't want to say on a similar level to F2, but once the Red Bull guys are done with F2, they move over to there instead of getting a seat in F1. Good job, Red Bull. But yeah, so the caliber is just getting increased year on year, which is fantastic for the series. And yeah, I do think that we have had a little bit of a change of the guard, but you can never count out the likes of Jev. Lucas, if he's competitive enough. Obviously, Mahindra had that fantastic weekend in Mexico and then just kind of fell off the cliff. And actually, I'd say the best Mahindra driver this year was actually Nico Müller, because the performances that he put in the latter half of the season was genuinely fantastic. But you can't count them out if they are competitive enough.
No, I do totally agree. But it'll be interesting when we do get to the new hardware, like, you know, will the Jevs and Van Dorns go back to the top if they've got the power? I know it's always the same with motorsport. Whoever has the best car has the best chance of winning, right? But because Formula E is so close, you know, those drivers do make the difference here and there. I want to talk about Cassidy then, because what it could have been, because Ed, it was an amazing start on the Saturday race. Like, you know, Buemi, they managed to get past Dennis, and it was all looking rosy, right? They were 1-2. Buemi had slowed up for Cassidy to take the attack mode, and for some reason, right, it seems like it was Cassidy's decision from Sylvain Filippi, from the interview that we did with him, that it was Cassidy's decision to sort of, okay, well, Buemi's helped me, I'll help Buemi and get the 1-2, which is staggering to think that it came from Cassidy. that decision, because obviously he dropped back, then Dennis managed to overtake him. He overtook Dennis, and then they were really close. And then there was that, I wouldn't say hesitation, but that, you know, do you swap places and potentially lose out to Dennis? And then Dennis still got Cassidy behind him because Buemi's dropped behind when they've swapped places. And then, and in that time where they were wondering, should we swap it, or it's too close, we're not going to swap, Cassidy makes a move and it ends in tears, with Buemi coming across and clipping his front wing, and that's game over. It was something that could have been, but like, it was heaven, which quickly turned to hell.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jack. It was a little bit of a messy situation, and it seemed to be Cassidy himself wanted to be a team player, and I think he said on the radio afterwards immediately, he's like, "Oh, that's what I get for being a team player," sort of like a. That he was sort of realizing that in prioritizing the team's championship, which Envision were leading, he had created the situation where he let Buemi through just before the attack mode, at the attack mode corner at 10:16. And I think he expected Buemi would repay the favor. And Buemi on the radio wasn't sure what was going on either. And with the situation where just after turn three into four, the two cars made contact, and Cathy's front wing just went under. And from then on, it was essentially game over for him on Saturday. I feel like it's very easy to look back in hindsight and say, well, he should have, the team should have let him through, or he should never have let Buemi through in the first place. But I think if things had worked out on that move and he lunged into turn one, two, and three, then we'd be saying very different things, because the outcome would have been different. But you do have to feel for Nick Cassidy, because he'd driven a beautiful season up to that point. He'd really improved from the last couple that he did, and some brilliant wins in Portland, Monaco, Berlin, all excellent races where he took advantage of, always went at exactly the right moment, and nobody was able to really hold much of a candle to him. So yeah, you got a feel for the way it panned out, but I think he'll take a lot of heart from this season, and switching teams as well, who come back a lot stronger in season 10.
Do you think it's a learning process though for Cassidy, because do you think he needed to overtake Buemi at that moment in the race and risked the championship, but he could have just stayed behind and waited for instruction? He was in front of Dennis, he could have stayed in front of Dennis and then waited for a safer place or safer time in the race to overtake Buemi than when he went and actually did it.
Again, it's another hindsight thing, isn't it? Where it's clearly the team could have communicated a lot better, because Buemi was asking what to do essentially. And should I let him through? Where do I let him through? And they were like, oh, well, we need to check where and how we can pull it off. And in the end, that delay led to that situation. So, yeah, I think Nick didn't really need to go for it at that point, but he's a racing driver. He's always going to do that, even if it's his teammate. And there has been a bit of friction between him and Buemi this season now and again, but I don't think that will be the takeaway here, because the whole reason that situation happened in the first place is because he let him through. So yeah, a lot of regret for Envision, but they still come away with the team's title, which is their first team's title as well. So I'm sure they'll be over the moon with that. And Sylvain Philippe indeed sounded over the moon when you interviewed him, Jack.
Yeah, he was. I've known Sylvain for a long time now, 9 seasons. And I know how much it meant to him, but he was very honest when he spoke to us about the situation. And as I said, it was really interesting to him here. It was Cassidy, but that opted to do what he did in that race, which, you know, I remember one of our German colleagues was saying in the media pen that he didn't understand it. Like, I didn't understand why Cassidy would do that. Like, you're fighting for the championship, why would you risk dropping back? And Cassidy said it was because I consider myself a team player. But I think, honestly, if Cassidy was to maybe reflect on this, and he's had time to reflect on it, I think he should have been more selfish. And I understand that they're trying to win a team's championship, but you're 1 and 2. You're in the best position at that point in the race, and you're in the best position for you in that race. So I understand fully what he did, why he did what he did. And I understand it, but I think there was a bigger picture. And I think he got lost in that bigger picture, because he was also focusing on the team's title for the team. Right, let's talk some transfer news. Then we'll do our best for Fabrizio Romano right now, see how many here we goes we can get into this. Obviously, we'll do the confirmed ones first, and then we'll look at some of the rumours and see, you know, which ones we can say are nearly there in terms of the deals being done. So, first one that was confirmed, which was obviously not a well-kept secret, was Castillo to Jaguar. Now, honestly, Pico, this sounds unreal, like him and Mitch Evans together, like at this precise moment, I who can stop that pairing? Like Jaguar, really, they should be going for the title next season. Obviously, they'll have the car to do it, but like I can't see a better lineup at this precise moment than those two.
If you want the in-form duo right now, you get the people who finished second and third in the championship. It's a phenomenal signing from Jaguar, and they are going to be the team to stop next season, I believe. They've signed an absolute blinder there, and also Nick knows the powertrain really well because he's just done a season with Envision, where he came second. So yeah, it's going to be an amazing lineup there. I do get kind of like vibes to when Lewis Hamilton joined Mercedes in 2013, because obviously Nick and Mitch grew up together and they competed on the ladder together, and now they're going to be teammates in a very competitive team that's going to be fighting for the championship. And just like Lewis and Nico did, they had the accident that happened in Rome earlier this season. So, but hopefully it won't get too heated between those two, because I hope it doesn't get to a point like we had with Lewis and Nico in Formula One, where it's very kind of like divided. They don't really talk anymore or anything like that. But I think Jaguar have done an absolute blinder. They've signed the best two that they could have done, really.
Yeah, I was speaking to Mitch Evans after the race on Sunday, and I was, you know, I said to him, it's probably better for Jaguar to have won the team's title than Envision to have won the team's title, because, you know, people will remember it as Envision's title, right? Yes, Jaguar gave them the powertrain, right? And okay, yeah, but people don't go, like, for me, if you go to McLaren, for example, when they were powered by Mercedes and they won a Constructors' Championship, you don't go, oh, well done, Mercedes. They did such a great job giving them an engine. You don't thank Mercedes that much. You thank McLaren, right? And the team that McLaren did and the strategist that McLaren did. And they won it. So being it's like, oh, it's nice. But really and truly, Jaguar lost the title. And I kind of pitched to Mitch Ed that I was wondering, in the future, would you expect now manufacturer teams to kind of not give the customers everything, right? Mitch Evans said he disagreed, right? In totally, he said, you know, he doesn't expect that to happen. He expects there to be a lot of, you know, knowledge to be shared and so forth, because at the end of the day, they are trying to build better electric cars for the road, and that's the whole point of this. So hiding stuff from one and then not testing it on four cars potentially would go against that. But from a, you know, you're driving from a manufactured side in Jaguar, and you've lost out to your customer team. And I was like, it's not a good look for the manufacturer to have lost. It's like Audi, for example, if Envision had won it with the Audi powertrain, I didn't think it would be a good look for Audi. So I don't think it's a good look for Jaguar. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Do you think maybe in the future, like, manufacturers who are sharing these customer teams, in order for them to have that advantage, which maybe Mitch has missed out on, you could say, I know you might need two strong teammates, which obviously Jaguar do have, and that's why I think they've got to be favourites for next season. But do you expect maybe customer teams to not get as much info maybe in the future?
Well, it's an interesting one. I think the McLaren and Mercedes comparison you make is probably a bit of an odd one in Formula E because Mercedes just became McLaren in that instance. But in terms of the customers, I feel like if you've got a software war going on, which is what we're looking for in next season, you sort of want as much data as possible. And I think that's where having a customer team can actually come in handy. Obviously, there's the self-interest point of view. There's the factory Jaguar team wants to win everything, wants to win the championship. But realistically, that's the reason why they've got Nick Cassidy, because in the end of the day, him, more than Buemi, made the big difference at the Envision team. So that's why they've had to sign him over to their team, because they think now we've got the two best drivers, we can win the championship. So Nick Cassidy was really one of the big things that stopped Jaguar. We saw it even in that amazing qualifying session in the final race of the season, where Cassidy snatched pole from Evans by a tiny, tiny margin that they're very, very evenly matched. I feel like it's sort of antithetical, not just in terms of Rokar EV development, but also in terms of from a competitive angle. Like, the whole point of the customer teams is like there's a set price. If a team comes to you and with a deal to do a customer powertrain supply, they've got to, there's a set price. They can't like make their powertrain exorbitantly expensive. They have to actually stick to that set price. And I think there's a whole load of competitive things that come with that in terms of equity, essentially. And so obviously Envision Jaguar, they've known each other so many years, they got on really well, they've traded drivers quite a few times, most notably Sam Bird, I guess, and now Cassidy as well. So it looks like Envision is sort of a Jaguar driver training ground, with this Mitch Evans getting the other seat. But I disagree a little bit with you. I feel like Evans is right on multiple counts. It's basically in the short term, maybe there's a benefit of just hiding stuff and not telling Envision certain things about the Jaguar powertrain, but A, they're very smart, they're going to find out anyway eventually, and B, in the long run, that sort of gets you nowhere, because you just end up with a customer team that doesn't trust you. And we've seen also with Porsche and Andretti that Andretti and Porsche, with Jake Dennis being so upset about Pascal Wehrlein not helping, that when you have a slightly frosty relationship between the two, the customer and manufacturer, it can sort of end up with awkward scenes like Michael Andretti storming off to have a strop at the Porsche garage, which is not good PR for either team, in my opinion.
Yeah, but to me, that moves on perfectly to perfect segue to what I was going to talk about, because if we talk about that incident then with the Porsches and the Andretti's, Pico, to me, I thought it was wrong. Right now, Michael Andretti storming into that Porsche garage, right? I don't think I like this idea of a four-car team, effectively, which is what we've got here, right? Four cars, and we're going to run them as one team, effectively. Yes, we're under different guises, but you're going to help us. This is mutual. We're helping each other. And to me, it just felt like, well, hold on a second, right? You're competing against each other. Yes, you've got the same powertrain, but you're competing against each other. So helping each other, I think, goes against the spirit of the competition, because how can you compete against one another to week in, week out? But as soon as it comes to a championships on the line, all of a sudden, we're going to be best friends. To me, it didn't sit right. I think, personally, Pico, I feel there should be a rule that if we're going to have team orders, yeah, you can have team orders between your own team, but you cannot have team orders with another team, even if that is your same powertrain partner. Pico, what are your thoughts on that very quickly?
I understand where you're coming from with that, and I do completely agree. I'm not a huge fan of it. Apparently, there was some... there was this plan going into London where the two factory Porsches would help Jake in the Drivers' Championship, and in return, Jake and Andre would do their best to help Porsche secure the Teams' Championship. Unfortunately for Porsche, they shot themselves in the foot on the Sunday when they really needed to, and there's this whole thing that was still going on with Da Costa's second place on the Saturday in Rome. Porsche have appealed it. They are going to sort that out. We'll know.
You mean London, Pico?
Yes. Yeah. Did I say Rome?
Yes, you did say Rome.
Okay, I meant London. Sorry. It's been a long session. I do understand why they do that. I think it's quite similar to a MotoGP, where you have in MotoGP you have the factory Ducati team, but Pramac are literally the VR46 team are there. Gresini recently won last weekend with Alex Marquez, and so they do work together as a unit, but they're still a bit more separate teams. So I feel like in they need to work more as like how the MotoGP guys do, because you get Ducati contracted riders that race for the satellite teams, whereas they are different. Obviously the teams are different teams, but they are working a bit too much like a four-car setup. And when Envision won the team's title on the Sunday, Jaguar, even though they were fighting for the title, James Bartley was delighted that it was Envision that took the title and not anyone else, because it was a customer team.
Yeah, I've waited too long. Actually, I haven't. Ed, I want your thoughts. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think the four car team is something that works, or is something that should change going into next season?
Oh, I suppose it kind of started in season 8, didn't it, with Mercedes and Venturi both running the Mercedes powertrain. We had a couple of rounds in season 8 where that was basically the top four in places like Berlin, for instance, race 2, I think. Yeah, there was one that Nyck de Vries won in season 8, but yeah, I think it's more prominent now that we've got so many different sets of customer teams, with Neo really being the 333 being the only odd one out, I guess. And I sort of agree with more. I think I err on the side of what Pico is saying, that you really don't want these sorts of things where basically there's a kind of like you said, that four car team, that sort of well, if we don't win, at least the B squad is doing well sort of aspect to it. I think we all want to see all the teams as individuals competing against each other, and not doing shady backroom deals and stuff like that. It reminds me sort of those stories you hear about, what was it, Jerez 1997, where like Ferrari and Sauber had a deal where the Sauber drivers would just get out of the way and block Jacques Villeneuve, and then Williams made a deal with McLaren that they would work together if they could get the upper hand on Ferrari and such and such. And it, and I feel like at a certain point, you just sort of want to see a motor race where it doesn't matter what's in the back of the car. It's the driver and the team running the car that should be the deciding factor in the end. And I think hopefully in the future, when we've got a bit more competition, it's not just the Porsche and the Jaguars that are the fastest ones. We might get the odd Nissan or Maserati DS or Mahindra or Neo 333 powertrain that's up there a bit more. Then we might see a bit more of teams as individuals rather than one or two having a big advantage, and all those teams sort of starting to consolidate that advantage to sort of block out the rest of the field. Because again, I don't think it's anti-competition, it's sort of natural when you've got in a dominant position that you'd want to do that, but I feel like it's not a great look, like you're saying, for the sport.
No, I agree with you, Ed. I think it's something that I think needs to change. I just don't think it's right that we have basically two teams, basically four cars, because then I don't know, it just ruins the spirit for me. But anyway, I love how this podcast, I love the tangents that we go on. We'll talk about transfers. So let's talk about our next transfer, which I think in terms of a championship run, you cannot rule out Robin Fries Pico with that Envision car. Because I remember there was an infamous interview that I did with him in Monaco. I think it was season 5 or 6, one of the two. And I said to him, he didn't have the great result in Monaco. And I said, you still got four races to go. And, how are you going to fight for this title? And he looked at me like, and he said, do you think I'm not a title contender anymore? And I said, no, I think everyone's a title contender. It's just, it's a bit harder for you now at this precise moment. And he said to me, well, I'm only here to fight for championships. I'm not here to finish third in a championship, which kind of made this thing of him moving to Apt quite funny, because he must have known, even though he has the Audi link, that it wasn't going to be a great season. And then he comes back to Envision where he could. For me, as much as I'm a big Buemi fan, I love Buemi, I think Frines could have done a better job than Buemi in that car this year, potentially, and could have been fighting for a championship alongside Cassidy. And he's got that chance next year. So, and we talked about that changing of the guard earlier. You know, Robin Fryans could easily fall into that mix.
Yeah, definitely. I heard something saying that something wasn't right midway through last year between Fryans and Envision. And the fact that App were coming back, and it was a team that he did multiple years with in DTM, it just seemed like a good move for him to move over. Admittedly, and this is the only time I'm bringing it up because I kind of want to forget I said it. I said Mahindra were going to have a great season because they signed Lucas and Robin went to Apt. We can forget that now. Let's move on. And the only thing that really stood out this year was the Berlin Pole, which honestly was fantastic. I loved it. I was in the media center in Germany, and to have App lock out the front row in Berlin was amazing. Everyone was super excited for that one. It's like the final didn't even matter. Just like after the semifinals, we knew it was an App front row. It's like, yeah, there we go. That's made our day. But it just wasn't to be this season. And as you just said, Robin wants to be competitive, and without any hardware changes going into next season, it would have probably been more of the same. So he's decided to jump back to the team. From what I'm aware, everything's water under the bridge now between him and Envision. That's why he's jumped back. And yeah, I think yeah, I mean, no, what, yeah, why not? Because I think that's a good seat for him. I know that he was rumored at Andretti as well, which we'll get onto in a bit. But I think Fryans he'll slot back in rather well, and weirdly he'll be on the other side of the garage because Seb obviously replaced him, and he's now replacing Nick. So I'm not sure what will happen in terms of like team personnel, but. Yeah, I'm sure Robin will be right straight back into it next season.
Yeah, let's talk Sam Bird then, because obviously Sam Bird has left Jaguar and it's pretty certain. So I'm pretty sure I saw a thing on Instagram or something that he posted saying, you know, day one at new job. And it's on his Instagram. It says, you know, British driver, FIA Formula E for who, .. wait and see. So he's definitely on the grid, Ed, for next season. And we are assuming pretty much that he will feel a spot left by René Rast. We think René Rast may be leaving the sport, maybe focusing on DTM. There was rumours potentially of him going to Apt for whatever reason that I heard in London. But it looks like that he'll be joining Jake Hughes in that McLaren, making it an all-British lineup. I think this is last chance saloon for Sam Bird in a sense. If he can't perform against Jake Hughes, if Jake Hughes beats him, I think this could be the start of the end for Sam Bird. If Sam Bird can get on top of Jake Hughes and fight him and beat him, then all of a sudden Sam Bird's back.
Yeah, it's a interesting one for Sam Bird. I agree that it's certainly an important phase of his career. That we're sort of closer to the end than the beginning, I think is the way I would see it. That we're going to see if Sam Bird can have an Indian summer or if he ends up sort of being continuing some of the difficult form that he had at Jaguar. René Rast, from what I understood, I think he wants to continue certainly, and he drove for Apt before, of course, in season 7 when they were the Audi factory team as well. So he does have a bit of history there. It would sort of make sense, but what we're hearing is that Kelvin van der Linde, who filled in for Fryans when he broke his hand early in the season, is probably the overwhelming favourite for that second seat, and it makes sense because the team knows him pretty well at this point. In terms of Sam Bird, he definitely didn't feel like... obviously, he was playing a lot to the fans when we were there. I remember even while Mitch was on the podium, Sam was out there sort of just at the pit wall signing autographs for fans as they were going by, which was a nice little touch. So it definitely felt like he was saying goodbye to Jaguar, but not to the sport itself. And I think that Instagram post sort of backs that up very much. Would McLaren be a good fit for him? In terms of obviously it's a,
as Mercedes, that was a championship winning squad. They've got the Nissan powertrain that they've still got to get to grips with, and it seems the factory squad was in the later part of the season did a better job on that part. I think Sam, with all that experience, McLaren definitely want an experienced driver to at least sort of show Jake Hughes the way. And Rene Rastway does have a lot of experience. He only done a couple of seasons in Formula E, whereas Sam Bird has got loads of experience dating back to day one, basically in Beijing 2014, back in September 2014, when he finished on the podium in that very first race. Sam, certainly he's him, Lucas, Seb, and even guys like Robin and Antonio sort of part of, I guess, the old guard, still fighting to prove that they deserve a place on the grid. I would love to see Sam Bird get back to his best, but I have a feeling he might have his days, but I think on the whole, Jake Hughes is only going to get better and better, and maybe Sam Bird, it's the fading of the light, isn't it? He's got to really, again, like I said, prove that he belongs there, and after being beaten by Mitch Evans, he definitely needs to rebuild his car. I think change will be good for him, wherever it works out in the long run. Whether we see Sam Bird in like 4 or 5 years' time still in Formula E competing at the front remains to be seen. But it's a brave move, and we'll see how it works out. They're, of course, conflicting for me because I hate McLaren for obvious reasons. So but I like Sam Bird. So there, how do you square that one? I don't know.
Obviously, views of that is of Ed and not of former Rizzo.
As a respected journalist, we need to remain impartial.
Well, you guys can.
And then it's also
sorry, guys.
But yeah, it's a bit harsh on Rene Rast, didn't you think, Pico? If he's being dropped on.
I totally get that. He did score McLaren's one and only podium this year back in Diria. But the thing is, like, McLaren were fantastic in the first half of the year. As soon as we got to the European leg, and since then, it's just kind of dropped off. Yes, Jake had a pole in Monaco. I can't remember where he finished in Monaco, but he had, compared to the start of the year, where he was third on the grid in Mexico City, then second and first on the grid in Diria, and the start of the year that McLaren had, to, I think they had the lowest number of points in the second half of the season. Even Ap Cupra scored more points with them over the second half of the year. So obviously McLaren have a lot to build on next year. But yeah, Rene, he was there or thereabout. He got into the duels in Rome. I think he was in one of the duels in London as well. And he's proved that he has form and he's able to be up there. It's just that the luck of the draw in the races has meant that that they've kind of just fallen away. And that's kind of where their season's been. They've been quick in qualifying and then kind of fallen away. And it's weird because McLaren have had this like downward trajectory throughout the year and Nissan have had this upward trajectory throughout the year. I quite like to see him in that app seat, but we'll see. I think from what we heard in London that Rene would like to stay on the grid, and if I'm completely honest, I think that app seat is kind of the only option for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Rene Rast. Pico, I'm going to come straight back to you because Andretti. Now, this one was a contentious seat, I suppose. Lots of drivers are fighting for this one, but it looks like Felipe Drugovich is the guy that might win the race. There was talks of Ollie Rowland going there. There was talks of Nick De Vries going there, but it looks like Drugovich, the former F2 champion, is heading that way.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to seeing Felipe in that seat in Andretti. I think. Although when he won the Formula 2 title last year, it was his third year of trying or something. So he did win it in dominant fashion. He won it, I think, in Monza, whereas the championship went on for another, well, I think there was another round after that, even though it was like 3 months after because the F2 calendar is a bit naff. I think he's an exciting prospect. He's been testing with Maserati this year. He was actually in contention for that Maserati seat with Nick De Vries was supposed to have before he went off to go Formula One, and the one that Max Gunter took. And he was also rumoured again this year to go to Maserati, but we believe that Max is going to stay there. And honestly, that's the right call because he's, I mean, as much as I love Enzo Mortari, he's such a joy to interview and chat to. But and Max has been the team leader basically this season. So I'm happy that Max is staying over at Maserati. But yeah, Felipe was rumoured there last year. And I'm really excited to see him on the grid. He did the rookie test in Berlin, and I believe he did the free practice session in Rome as well. But honestly, I can't remember at this point. But yeah, it, but,
are you surprised that maybe like a Nick De Vries, obviously season 7 champion, was not picked up for that seat, and they went with Dragovic rather than maybe a more known quantity in De Vries?
So Nick was, it's a basically, it was between Andretti and Nissan in terms of where De Vries and Roland were going to go. And it's now looking more likely that Roland's going to return to Nissan. And De Vries is going to Harvard University to do some studying next year. This is something that's it's come out in like literally this morning is when we found out about this. And so, yeah, I mean, like we wish Nick all the best. But yeah, he's pressed pause on his career. He's going to go off and do this and then potentially come back and do some racing afterwards. But yeah, I mean, like we've seen racers go away and do other stuff. I know Jaime Alguersuari retired after, before London in season one. I know because I was very frustrated because I really wanted to meet him because he was my favourite Formula E driver in season one and he wasn't in London. Because
he became a DJ.
He became a DJ, but he's returned to do some odd racing here and there. I know that he's done some professional karting and I think he's done some odd GT racing here and there. Don't quote me on that. I might be wrong.
Jaime actually DM'd me asking for me to help crowdfund his motorsport.
Oh, he DM'd me as well.
I think he DM'd a lot of people.
And I politely turned him down, and he was very nice about it.
But yeah, I think I might have ghosted him.
I don't even think I. Yeah, sorry. I think I may have done the same. Sorry, Jaime. But
sorry, yeah. Jaime.
I didn't have much money back then.
Oh no, I mean, yeah, no, I don't have much money anymore either. I've spent too much money traveling around the world following this poxy series called Formula E.
You gotta love it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, I regret nothing. It's been amazing. But I think, yeah, I'm sure Nick will come back to racing in some shape or form. But for now, he reached Formula One, which is the aim for all racing drivers. Yes, he didn't last as long as he hoped it would, but he's now going to go away, do something else, and potentially come back in the future, whether it's Formula E, whether it's something else. I think he's surely going to end up doing like WEC or IMSA or something like that. But yeah, I think the next logical choice would be Felipe Drogovic, considering that he was touted for a seat here and there. They could have gone with David Beckman, but I think that Drogovic is a more capable set of hands. They could have looked to there's a handful of F2 drivers that let's be real, like F2 drivers, two or three tops from each year get through to Formula One, and there's plenty of other great drivers who've done Formula Two, like your Mitch Evans is, who were pretty decent but have gone on to thrive in Formula E.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. Ed, I suppose this one, Pico kind of mentioned here, this is a bit harsh on Norman Neto as well, because I think he's had a great season at Nissan. But Ollie Roland, he left Mahindra, and I think it wouldn't surprise me if we see more of this in the future with this 2-year powertrain cycle that we have with the hardware. Because if you're a good driver, like a Lucas Degrassi, for example, right, he could have easily have jumped ship as much as Roland jumped ship if he wanted to, because he knew that next season's also not going to be a competitive year. So I'm not going to waste a year of my life in an uncompetitive car when maybe I can go out there and find a competitive car. Maybe this leaving halfway through the season or leaving after one season at a team, if it doesn't go well at the beginning of a cycle, might be a bit of a norm going forward. Because, yeah, you know, like all of us, we don't want to waste our time. You know, we all want to fight. We all want to be at the front. We always want to be doing the best that we can possibly be doing. And if you're going to stagnate for a year, which is why I'm a little bit against the two-year cycle, I understand it for the money-saving side of things, but it does create this stagnation period for a lot of teams. And, you know, speaking to Frederick Bertrand, it is frustrating, but he says it's the same for everybody else. Once you get it wrong, you can't really fix it until after the second year. But do you think Roland at Nissan, obviously he left Nissan, going back to Nissan, what do you make of that, and your thoughts on Paul Norman, who, you know, had a great season, really was doing great in qualifying. Obviously Sascha kind of outperformed him at the beginning, but Norman by the end of the season was just as good as Sascha.
Yeah, and as I always say about Norman Nato, incredibly hard worker, maybe not a sort of instantly sort of quick, but he really, really works hard at it. And you could tell towards the end of the season, he had started to crack this Gen 3 car. And it's a shame because it seems like the driver decision may have been made a bit earlier once Roland became available on the market. And I think it's a real shame for Norman because it seems to be the way it happened to him at Venturi as well in season 7, where he won the final race of the season, had finally got on top of the Gen 2 car, and then he'd been replaced by Lucas Degrassi, funnily enough. And the driver merry-go-round, it plays its part. And I think Fenestraz is a sort of... I think Fenestraz certainly did enough. That pole position in Cape Town was immense. And he certainly got room to grow as a rookie going into his sophomore season. Going to Roland and Degrassi, I feel there's a couple of factors why Roland left. One, he was clearly unhappy with the team. It clearly wasn't what Dilbag Gill had promised him before Dilbag obviously left and Frederick Bertrand came in to replace him. I think also there's a sense that when Lucas came in, Lucas Degrassi, we know he's a very, I don't want to say political, but certainly he's very good at getting everything in the team to work around him. And I think Oliver Roland saw there was a threat there and maybe felt, I don't want to be just hanging around in Lucas Degrassi's team where it's not particularly competitive and I'm just struggling at the moment. And obviously, maybe it seems a bit ironic him going back to Nissan, but essentially now that they bought out Edams, it's a new team of a whole new set of management and people involved there running that team, essentially, and sort of senior management. So, and Norman Nato and Sascha Fenestraz have been saying the whole season, this is basically the first season for a new team, essentially. This is kind of a sort of a rebuilding year, essentially, for them. So Nissan, you can see from that point of view, an attractive prospect for Ollie Roland, and he definitely wants a Nissan. That's qualifying was a real strength for Roland in his early seasons at Nissan as well. So I definitely can see the one lap pace that Nissan showed that he'd want to get in that car. And I think Ollie Roland needs it to rebuild his confidence. But it's a shame Norman Nato had to miss out. I love Storm and Norman, you know that. But I'm sure we haven't seen quite the last of him yet. I think he's too good to be completely left aside. He probably will take, like he did in season 8, a reserve role at another team. But yeah, I think his efforts deserved, and it's crucially getting Nissan ahead of McLaren in the championship, which I, of course, was delighted about. But yeah, I imagine McLaren weren't particularly happy. But I think Norman Nato was a big part of that, getting that fourth place in the final race of the season with, got them just enough to make sure McLaren couldn't overhaul them. So I think it sets up interestingly for next season with Roland hopefully competitive again, because I think we definitely need Ollie Roland at the front, because he's one of those guys who, with just one win to his name, is a lot more to give to Formula E.
Indeed. So that kind of wraps up the sort of the transfers and the ongoing sagas.
I will say there is a spare seat in Mahindra, and I'd absolutely be down for Norman to go there. So
that could happen. Yeah. That could happen. But obviously that hasn't.
We're hearing De Ruvela, James.
Yeah, that makes the most sense for Mahindra. But yeah, not much has been. To be fair, the Mahindra one hasn't. There's not been too many murmurs on that. But yeah, that's been a quite a long standing one since Roland left, really, until they couldn't put him in because of his F2 commitments. I think you were telling me, Pico, earlier in the season.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. So that was the news going around the block on that one. So, to end the show, because it's been a nice long show. We just sort of wrap up the season, but in terms
Tell
of
me
like the
about it.
in terms of the biggest surprise, I think for me, my biggest surprise was DS. The sort of the Mercedes, you could argue, of Formula E for so long, and then we get a new era and it doesn't quite work, a bit like Mercedes. So I think for me, DS was a bit of a shock because obviously when you got a partnership of Van Dorn and Jev, you'd expect something special. But as Van Dorn was telling me, it was a whole new team, coming over, and obviously they've still got Jay Penske there, and it's a weird one. I know Jay's a winner. He's like the Tom Cruise of a paddock, in effect. I never think I've ever seen him not wear sunglasses. Even in the indoor section, he was still wearing sunglasses. It's dark enough walking to the paddock, and he's still in sunglasses. But I don't know what the dynamic there. I don't know, because obviously DSLC also have their own people or their own management structure, and Penske's kind of running the team. So I don't know if there was any clashes there or something like that, that maybe, but I'm kind of speculating there. Because things in the past, maybe with Jay Penske and things that haven't worked out his way, and maybe I don't know if that had any contributing factors, but that's just me speculating why I think DS were a bit poor. Was there any big surprises for you guys?
I'm thinking, yeah, now I'm having to think now. I think,
Okay, well, I can give you
yeah.
my mind while you're thinking
Yeah,
for me.
go for it, Ed.
I would say, I think Dan Ticktum was a big surprise to me because when Sergio Sete Câmara was signed, I think a lot of people felt Sete Câmara was going to walk Dan Ticktum, and Ticktum was
Nah.
not only incredibly fast, but I think he was able to replicate that sort of qualifying form throughout the season and getting into the duels in, I think, about half the races he was able to do it. And even when he wasn't in the duels, he was only marginally, outside that top four in his group. So usually, and you think of things like him leading briefly in Berlin, him making that move in the wet on Mortara, getting up to ninth, getting those crucial points to get them ahead of Mahindra in the team standings as well. I think Ticktum was, obviously, he had his other moments, which, well, he didn't exactly cover himself in glory, but I think he was overall a real asset to Neo 333 this season when they didn't have a car that was perhaps the most energy efficient. He was able to get the most out of it when it was quick, essentially. And I feel like he really outperformed the car he was in. There are a couple of other standouts, obviously Nico Müller, mentioned by Jack Pickering as well. I think getting that sixth place in Rome especially was a big highlight, but also other races where he was able to just creep into the points was very impressive. I thought Jev's win in Hyderabad, you're talking about DS Penske being disappointed. I think Jev outperforming his car as well in Hyderabad to get that win and hold off Nick Cassidy and Seb Buemi was, I think, a very, very impressive defensive drive where Jev kind of obviously helped a little bit by Sam Baird taking Mitch Evans out of the equation. But even so, I think Jev was absolutely on fire that day. And
And he had that
that was probably a race.
1% energy as well that he managed to get
Exactly,
to the
yeah.
end.
I think that was a race Jev didn't really deserve to. Well, no. The DS Penske probably didn't really deserve to win, and Jev somehow clawed that victory from the jaws of defeat, which is always what we love. Those sorts of stories we love to see in Formula E, where a champion is able to claw victory when it probably should have got away from them. But yeah, I'm sure Nick Cassidy would be rueing that because he felt if Jev wasn't in the way, he might have been able to win the championship. But ifs and buts, So I think those are the three that really, really stand out to me, Ticktum, Müller, and Jev in Hyderabad specifically.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a massive fan of Dan Ticktum. Massive fan. Someone who I really want to sit down with maybe before pre-season,
Yeah,
and have a
fascinating
good.
character,
Yeah,
isn't
he is.
he?
He is a fascinating character, and
He's lovely. I love
he
Dan.
is. He is. He is. Honestly, he is. He's just a. He's a born racer. I know half these racing drivers are born racers, but and that's kind of like a catchphrase there, but like he just wants to win, and I love that about him. Pico, what were your shocks of the season?
I'm gonna be like really weird about this one and say that my surprise of the year was the style of racing we had. It's nothing like we've ever really seen before in Formula E, like what we had in the races such as Portland and Berlin and Monaco and Sao Paulo. And I mean, like it's very Marmite. You love it or you hate it, but either way, it's got people talking about it. But yeah, it so yeah, that is my surprise of the season, just what the racing's been like. I would have never expected to have anything like the what do we have, 409 overtakes in Portland, the 112 overtakes around Monaco, the 376 overtakes across the Berlin weekend. It's
but
crazy.
They weren't real overtakes.
Yeah, I agree, but but yeah, that my surprise of the year is the racing. It's such a weird, confusing answer.
Yeah,
but that is my surprise of the year.
It was a surprise to have the peloton style racing. I must admit, I much preferred London. I must admit, with the it was very normalized.
Not London
in London.
Two. London Two was a bit.
Yeah, but sometimes
London One was
look. Sometimes you
chaotic.
Go. Sometimes you go to a football match and you watch a 0-0 draw, right? You pay your entry fee. Sometimes they're not as entertaining, but
and sometimes at a cricket match it gets rained off as well.
Yeah, it gets rained off, but you've paid your money. You don't get no refunds for Ashes Day. That was a farce in itself. The fifth day of the Ashes series, and it gets rained off. You don't get your money back for it. It's just, it is what it is. But yeah, anyway, all that aside. I get you. It was strange. I did not enjoy it, but I did enjoy the races that were more like proper races. But that was mainly because of track layout and energy being a bit of an issue. But hopefully with attack charge, that sorts itself out. The only perfect thing I'd like to add is Sacha Fenestraz. I think Sacha surprised me. I think he was really solid, brilliant, got the pole positions, and was super quick. Obviously, Nissan faded away towards the second half of the season, unfortunately. But I think he could be another force to be reckoned with. If Nissan get the software right and make and fund the small improvements, I wouldn't be surprised if they would be up there with Envision and Jaguar and so forth and Andretti's and fighting out for those podiums on a more regular basis, because you know, the potential in that car is there for sure. And in the hands of Sacha Fenestraz and potentially Ollie Rowland, I think it can go far. And Sacha, as you said earlier, will only improve. So yeah, Sacha for me. But boys, it has been an absolute mammoth show. I don't know when we'll be back. We're going to take a little break, but we will be back.
Oh, it's not like this is a break, like our break that we always have. Literally all the time.
But we are consistently
we are so
inconsistent. People.
We're taking a break.
It's unbelievable.
Let's
take a break.
They'll be testing
before
that.
Have a great Christmas,
that.
Everyone.
Yeah, have a great Christmas. No. We'll be back before Christmas.
Oh, yeah. No, testing.
We'll be back. Testing is going to be huge. Now, honestly, there's some new ideas that were floating around. The FEZ show will still carry on in itself, but there'll be definitely one or two new things that I think we want to try for season 10 and so forth. But it's been absolutely amazing having you listen, joining, comment. We appreciate every comment, every view, everyone who listens via the podcast apps or on YouTube. It's been really nice, and the feedback we get from some of the comments or the ratings, when you know someone gives us a 5-star rating on Spotify, like, we love that. It means the world. We also, you know, wouldn't be surprised if you gave us a 1-star sometimes. But
I get the blame because I do the editing.
But yeah,
so, yeah.
We appreciate.
I personally
all of your
feel
feedback.
All the 1-star reviews, so we'll take that feedback to heart and try and be better.
Oh yeah, that's the slogan of the show. If in doubt, blame Ed. Yeah.
If in doubt, blame Ed. Yeah, very true. But thankfully, I don't think we have a 1-star.
Glorify Pet, as I said at the beginning.
I don't think we have a 1-star review on the podcast. Now people rushing listening to this 1-star. But
it's all your fault, Ed. Yeah. You should have kept your mouth.
And
I apologize also for the change of camera too.
Yeah, it's all right. Sometimes things have to happen, right? But again, thank you so much for listening. And we will be back. We'll probably do another show before testing. Wrap up all the new sort of driver moves, anything other moves that have happened, maybe find out where we are going in those TBC events. We should be Hydra a bit bad. It should be Cape Town, Malaga potentially. But just in case Seoul pops up, we'll talk about that and so forth in another show once all those news comes out. We might have another magazine coming out as well. So lots of things to look out for before we head to Valencia in October, which... annoyingly, because this year is going fast enough as it is, will come up sooner than we probably would all like. But until then, thank you so much for watching. We've been Formula E Zone, the FEZ Show, and we'll see you soon. Bye.